Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and today we're talking about music and film. Chris Slusterenko is the host of Revolutions Per Movie, the podcast where musicians, actors, and filmmakers choose a favorite music documentary, video, or musical. Victor Krummenacher is the co-founder of the band Kemper Van Beethoven and the frontman for the freewheeling show Coffee with Krummenacher. Chris and Victor, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Oh, thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So, Chris, let's start with you and let's talk about Revolutions Per Movie. You say this is your deep dive into our lifelong obsessions where music and film collide.
Yeah, I mean, I owned Clinton Street Video for 22 years. And before that, I worked at the Northwest Film Center. And so there was a period where I got into every single movie theater in town. And that was still when, like, there was the Guild and the Movie House and all these little boutique independent film places to go see stuff. So I would devour it all the time. But as the, 40 years in music, I was also obsessed with music and bands and going out to shows. And so after closing the store, 7 years ago, Victor and myself are in a band called Eyelids with John Moen, who's in the Decemberists, and Jonathan Drews and Holly Pulverenti. And when you're stuck in the van, lots of stuff comes up. And we just start talking about music films. And literally on our last tour, I was thinking, I think I want to start a podcast where guests bring up these films that they may be obsessed with that are either musical narrative films or music documentaries or a series of work by an artist. And it's been amazing. So, Jerry Casale of Devo will come on and talk about his body of work. And then I'll have like performance artist Ann Magnuson come on and talk about Jazz on a Summer's Day. And that conversation will be really emotional. And then someone will come on and want to talk about a Gore movie. And it's just really ludicrous. So I never know where it's going to go. And part of this led into doing this show with Victor, because also the other thing that happened in the van is Victor's stories are incredible. I mean, I've been seeing Victor since I was a kid, but I didn't know that Victor was a kid. I didn't know he was an underage member of a popular band, Kemper Van Beethoven. When I go see him, I was like, he's only a couple of years older than me. So hearing all the stories of Victor's youth and who he ran around with and how he got started in music and the good times, the ripoffs, all the things that happened. When I was starting the show and I knew it was going to be listener supported and we were going to do a Patreon and we were doing specific standalone shows on that. One of them that I wanted to do was a deep dive into Victor's life. And so we came up with Coffee with Krummenacher, which is just like me finding different aspects of Victor's life I didn't know about and always surprising him. He never knows where we're going to go on each episode.
So before we get too deep in the weeds here, I do want to say that you have a show coming up, the two of you, a live show that's going to be happening in Portland. And give us a little bit of the details of that.
We are going to do a live episode of Coffee with Krummenacher. We're going to bring a special guest. We're going to bring Greg Leicher, who is also in Kemper Van Beethoven with me. I guess we're still a band, actually. we're slated to actually play some shows next year, believe it or not. So, but Greg's going to come up. Greg and I have continued to do, even in periods of time where Kemper hasn't been active, he and I have worked together. So it's going to be interesting because we haven't added another personality to this, and Greg's memory is different than mine, but I think that's the tangent we're going to go off of on. Although I don't want to speak for Chris, and I actually don't want to know what the questions are because it's just way better.
And Greg and Victor are also going to perform a set of music in between them. So it'll be a live taping. We did one with Peter Buck from REM at Cinema 21, where we talked about the REM documentary. And it was so fun. So doing it live is just killer. It's just really fun.
Well, Victor, you've had a lot of adventures in the world of indie music and Kemper Van Beethoven. For folks who don't know, I mean, this was just a seminal 80s, 90s band. I have to tell you that Take the Skinheads Bowling was one of my go-to songs back in my college days.
That song has a really wide international resonance.
Oh, yeah. It's just, catchy as hell. And, the late 80s, early 90s were a great time for fun, smart indie music. You had everybody from they might be giants to Primus to the Bare Naked Ladies.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of those bands I've played with at various points. Yeah, I think we were, Camper was an interesting thing. You know, we broke up right kind of as the 80s went into the 90s and kind of disappeared. And David Lowery went on to form Cracker, which was, you know, a far larger band as far as radio play. But Camper had a very distinct personality and it was a very formative time. And I wound up running around with a lot of people who wound up being kind of oddly famous or notorious on a certain level. And it's interesting. I'm a storyteller. I come from a family of storytellers. I was raised in one of those families where, you know, you were expected to sit at the dinner table and be able to hold your own. And I think, you know, the kind of colorful personalities I was raised around just kind of created this sense of narrative storytelling. You know, and I've also worked as an art director and a songwriter. This is all, it's all storytelling. And yet I've worked as a film editor. Sometimes that's storytelling. So it's just, it's part of my personality. I grew up outside of Los Angeles, about an hour away, and I was running around. You know, it was a very intense group of people. I was definitely like latchkey kid generation. I was hanging out with bands like The Germs when I was a kid with no real knowledge even of who they were necessarily. And it's interesting that I wound up where I am, but it's also, it's good to reflect on that because I think it had a great deal to do with the kind of person I became.
And it's been fun because one episode is always sequential, but then we jump one that leapfrogs into the future, past everything about his life. So again, it's really fun to throw Victor off. All of a sudden I'll be like, all right, we were talking about your origin story and how the person who sold you your bass broke into your house and stole it. And, you know, and then I'm like, tell me about the time you backed Tiny Tim with Camper Van Beethoven. And he's like, oh, yeah, right. And so, you know, as somebody who saw Victor early on in Camper, they were already such a weird band with such a mystique going for them. Second album was what year, Victor?
End of 85, early 1986.
I was at Pine Street Theater with a handful of people. And I just was like, what is this? There's a guy walking around barefoot on stage with a violin. Gross. They have a pedal steel player. They have a punk rock kind of lead singer. There's some hit on bass that they keep saying it's his birthday, you know, and I was like, this is beautiful because bands are just, they're fleeting. Like I really was like, I'm seeing a band that is magical, but they could be gone tomorrow because it was so disparate and so unique. And also, it was like, well, what are you going to do with it? There's not like a career in it. You do it because you love it, right?
So can we hear a little bit more about this fabled Tiny Tim incident, or do we have to wait to see you on stage?
No, we already recorded it for the Patreon, but the Tiny Tim one was like one where I was just like, how, why, where? So Victor, go for it.
Yeah, the long and short of it is that we were on tour with R.E.M.
With R.E.M.?
R.E.M. I had met R.E.M. Well, I'd met him a few times, but our first record, Telephone Free Landslide Victory, came out in 1985. And R.E.M. Made a point of being very accessible. I'd met them after gigs before. They would always come out after gigs and talk to people. So I gave them a copy of Telephone Free Landslide Victory, and they listened to it and got back in touch with us immediately. We were a self-booked, completely do-it-yourself band at this point, and they asked us if we would go on the road with them. Peter loved Richard Thompson a lot, and Peter was the first person who took me to see Richard Thompson. And so Richard was on tour at that point, and Peter wanted Richard to open for R.E.M. So we got kicked off tour for a day and had an open date. Richard opened for R.E.M. in Cleveland, and we were in Ohio, and we used to play this place called Stashes and Little Brothers on High Street, the main drag, the main north-south drag in Columbus. And the guy called, he's like, well, I could have you in, but I got Tiny Tim in here. But he needs a backing band, so if you want to back him up. And at this point, I loved Eugene Chadbourne quite a bit. And we had started working with Eugene because Eugene would bring it. He worked with the Violent Femmes and a number of indie bands. So we had some experience kind of with the crazy, unscripted, like, learn songs as you play them, essentially. And so we went and we opened for Tiny Tim, and then we played with them. Virtually no rehearsal other than the sound check. And, you know, we were an indie rock band. I mean, I was a pretty good musician pretty quickly, but, you know, I didn't know how to read people harmonically. And we were a very strange band. We were not a uniform looking group of people. We were not a uniform group of people by any means. So it just became this kind of wild thing where you had Tiny Tim leading us through these Tin Pan Alley songs from the 1920s. And we're trying to get a grip on those chord structures. And, you know, he's also playing a ukulele. So there's no kind of hand reference because I don't play the ukulele. So I'm like, I don't know what is what. You know, if you've got a guitar player, I'm like, okay, that finger's there. I can follow along. So there was no reference point. So it was this kind of really interesting train wreck. But the most interesting thing about it to me ultimately was that Tiny Tim was this wild, very big personality who was hugely famous in the 1960s. So hanging out backstage with this guy, you know, he's talking about like being on the Ed Sullivan Show and hanging out with Jim Morrison and just all this kind of, you know, I grew up with Tiny Tim on the TV, probably was doing a John Carson episode when I was 4 or whatever. But the whole situation of actually being around him and seeing like what he was, and also he was kind of fallen at this point. You know, he was hardly at the peak of his fame. He was, you know, it had a little bit of Sunset Boulevard to it. I'll put it that way. If you actually, there are recordings of this, you can go on to like archive.org and find a recording of us doing it. And it is kind of a train wreck. You know, maybe when he plays I Got You, Babe, we kind of get a clue like, oh, right, Dylan song. Maybe I know what's going on. But I wouldn't say it was a seminal musical event. It was just a very interesting clash of cultures. You know, sitting with Tiny Tim and some friend of his who did road work for the Doors, who'd been bitten by a brown recluse spider and had some big abscess on his leg and was walking on crutches. These are the kinds of things you don't think about until you have to recollect it.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And today we're talking about music and film. We're here with Revolutions Per Movie host Chris Slusarenko, as well as Camper Van Beethoven co-founder Victor Krummenacher. Before we get back to the conversation, I'd like to take a moment to remind our listeners that KBOO is in the midst of our Wake Up the Neighborhood membership drive. We hope that you've been enjoying our programming and that you'll take a moment to pledge your support. There are all kinds of ways to join KBOO. On the web, you can visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. And if you prefer to go analog, we're always happy to receive a contribution in the mail. The address of the station is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And now let's talk some more with our guests, Chris Slusarenko and Victor Krummenacher. So, Chris, how deep a dive do you take into film history? Because music in film goes back, you know, just about a century to the dawn of sound on film.
Sure. I mean, I've had Alonzo Giralde on recently, who wrote the TCM book on queer cinema. And it goes all the way back to the birth of cinema. And it's like one of the first films ever made was a queer-leaning film. But I don't profess myself to be a scholar. But I do a ton of research, and a lot of it is osmosis from just having a life in film and knowing filmmakers and having the store and having to be on my game in terms of suggesting stuff or being knowledgeable enough that if somebody comes in and they want to know like what the eighth film by Fassbinder is, I kind of had to like, okay, let me figure this out, right? But the thing that excites me is I don't pick the movie. It's what people want to share. And so sometimes you're like, I can't believe you picked this film out of all of the things you could talk about. Sometimes it's just really left field. And other times it seems spot on. Sometimes they're very emotional. I've had people break down on the show and cry. And then I've had people who are just wild on it. And it's like hard to pull them down and they're just excited. And so it's just a cool meeting of minds and personalities. And again, when I start the show, I may be like, oh, we're going to talk about the Who's Tommy. I have a filmmaker who just made this A24 film, Funny Pages. They've picked the film. They're obsessed with the Who. They're obsessed with Ken Russell. But then I go and find Barry Winch, who played young Tommy in the film Tommy, to talk about what it was like to work with Ken Russell, what it was like working with Oliver Reed and Anne Margaret and the Who. That I cannot do on my own, right, as a fan of the film. And so that's what I try to do on this show, is bring these things in that kind of surprise myself and the listener as we're doing it in real time.
So this is Revolutions Per Movie, and lots of your guests are musicians. So you talk about films like Tommy that are narrative films that are essentially musicals, almost operas. You talk about concert films, documentaries, music videos. And music videos, these go back much further than even video itself, the technology. Some of the forerunners of music videos were, well, animated short films in the 1930s, you know, featuring jazz greats like Louis Armstrong and Cab Calloway. And the cartoon parts were animated by the Fleischer Brothers studio that went on to produce the early Popeye and Superman shorts.
Yeah, the Merry Melodies and things like that. And then, you know, we were talking earlier about Scorpio Tone, which came in through the 60s, I believe.
Yeah, in the 60s, there were Soundies and Scopatones. And yeah, if you go to the upstairs lobby at the Hollywood Theater, you can see an actual Scopatone machine from the 1960s. And these were essentially film jukeboxes, video jukeboxes that were in bars and diners.
They're amazing, too. So it'll be like a surf band playing a song about space. And then they're shot in the woods on 16 millimeter. And then like some robot is like walking with a woman through it and going to like a paper rocket. It's like beautiful and nightmarish at the same time. The light is different. You know, it's often stylized lighting, but with a budget. Like these things did not have a lot of money to be made. But at the video store, I collected those and I was obsessed with playing them all the time just because people would come in and be like, what are you watching? I'm like, oh, this is the Russian chubby checker. You don't know him? You know, you don't know Barry? It was always a treat.
Well, I was just thinking back to the days when MTV actually had music videos.
It's funny, when Jerry Casale came on from Devo, he talked about the video czar and how at a certain point they had to start getting their stuff approved. And they would try to sneak in like weird subversive stuff. And they'd be like, all right, Casale, you can keep the donut, but you got to get rid of the French fry. These conversations were real, and it's just so weird. It was such a free place at first because they were just throwing anything on for content. It didn't matter. It could be Blotto, this horrible band doing like, I Want to Be a Lifeguard, was played all the time because they're like, we have 100 things to show over 24 hours. We got to go, you know. And Victor, you've worked with like what, Carl Grosso? And
yeah, we worked with Carl Grosso. I mean, we came up in the era where, you know, videos were a big part of your budget. You know, the videos for Key Lime Pie were as much, there was as much money earmarked for the videos as there was for the actual recording of the record. Because, you know, we were working like 35 millimeter cameras on location. We spent $100,000 plus, I think, on one video, which is insane now because, you know, I'm in signed bands and we get, you know, $15,000 to make a record. And that's looked at as a generous budget. So it's become a very much more compressed thing. But it's interesting, kind of what you guys are talking about, because, you know, Carlos was really just, he didn't know what he was doing. He was making it up as he went along. He was the design director for, what was the show? Was it 120?
IRS, The Cutting Edge.
Edge, right.
Which was he did all the IRS artwork, like, you know, he did the Cramps, he helped REM, the Go-Go. He was pivotal in the look of IRS.
Yeah, very much. And, you know, but, you know, we worked hand in hand with Carlos, and he would just be like, we rented some old soundstage that's not getting used much on Santa Monica, and we're just going to be there. They have some scrims. I don't know what they are, but just like bring a bunch of different clothes and we'll see. And you get there and they're like, what are we doing? It's like, well, we just come up with a shoot list. And like, we have some like, you know, antebellum Civil War mansion backdrop that we've lowered down, and just, do you have something that looks like a tuxedo? I'm like, well, I got these black pants. Yeah, wear that, put that vest on and just go. And then you just go. And then you think, well, okay, that's going to be just like us, you know, jumping up and down in front of the scrim. And then Carlos sends you the first cut, and it's like all this found footage, and there's like a rooster and like some dude eating fried chicken and a carousel. And you're like, what is, but then you're like, it's brilliant, right?
So Chris, circling back to analog technology, on Revolutions Per Movie, you talk a lot with guests about concert films and music documentaries. We've had a couple of pioneering documentary filmmakers in our show back in the day, sadly no longer with us, Albert Maisels and D.A. Pennybaker. Yep. Maisels directed Gimme Shelter, about the infamous Rolling Stones concert at Altamont Speedway. And Pennybaker may be best known for the Bob Dylan documentary Don't Look Back. He also directed Monterey Pop and David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust concert film.
Yeah, and also, it's so funny. So John Cameron Mitchell, who is a filmmaker and an actor who did Hedwig and the Angry Inch, picked Gimme Shelter to talk about. And we talked about how seeing the film when we were in our teens is so different than seeing it now as, like, you know, late period adults. And just how much more devastating it is every time we watch it. Because I think when we were younger, we were enamored with the wildness of it and the horror of it. But now it's just so affecting in terms of how much they captured. They didn't know what was going to go down. And there's just certain images that I had forgotten, like just a dog walking across the stage in the middle of Altamont at one point. You're like, while all this chaos is going on, this dog just saunters across. And we both picked up on it. We're like, I didn't remember this when I was young, but it seemed to symbolize so much, like just the chaos, everything going down. And then with Pennybaker, we had Peaches Christ, who's a legendary San Francisco drag queen, drag mother of Portland's own Jinx Monsoon, and basically wanted to talk about Depeche Mode 101, which was a film DA made along with Chris Hedges later in his life. And it ended up being Pennybaker's favorite film. And he'd done Dylan, Bowie, you know, Monterey Pop, like you said. And what was interesting was he was not a fan of the band when he started making it, but by the end of it, he was completely blown away again by how they ran their show, their fan base. And the film is a precursor to reality TV in a funny way, pre-MTV, like Road Rules, pre-MTV Real World. And he picks these kids in New York City to just travel across the nation for the first time in their life to go to see the band in California. And these kids in this film are not worried about catchphrases or their identity or how they can monetize it or where this can go in their career. They're just excited to be on the road and they're so comfortable. And I think that also was a thing that Pennybaker really liked about the film, is that he captured the fan base in this really innocent way. They're just kids being kids. And it's about them like driving through the middle of America with weird hair and seeing what would happen. It's a really kind of amazing film that I was not really aware of before, you know, having the episode.
I'll explain to anyone who's unfamiliar that the Stones concert that was captured in Gimme Shelter, their security was the Hell's Angels. And that was a really bad idea. Guy ended up getting stabbed to death. And like you said, nobody expected that. And I think nowadays, you know, you'd have dozens of people filming with their cell phone cameras, but the portable film equipment they used back in the 1960s, it was revolutionary for its time, but it seems impossibly bulky and unwieldy by our 21st century standards. I mean, the film and the lenses weren't very light sensitive, and those 16 millimeter film loads would run out after 10 or 12 minutes.
Well, and also they would have to form human pyramids to basically get over the audience. So reading about the movie and about them making the film, there would be somebody like, okay, stand on my back. I'm just going to be a human table for you to stand above. And the other person is going to run the sound, but we're going to feed you the film. It was just so seat of the pants. And also several of the filmmakers and crew members, including a young George Lucas, were involved, but some of them got dosed and had to basically lie down or disappear for much of the shoot.
Yeah, I think it's testimony to a certain era of media and culture where things were just not very controlled or very scripted. For me, you know, Resonance has a lot to do with spontaneity and unexpected consequences. And when art can reflect that, it's a wild thing. Give Me Shelter is a really good film on that level because it is so spontaneous.
Well, Chris and Victor, let's tell people once again about the event that you're doing together. Give us the details.
All right. Well, it's called Coffee with Krumenacher. It's a spinoff podcast of Chris's Revolutions Per Movie podcast. We're going to do a live episode at the Clinton Street Theater on September 23rd at 7 p.m. We have Greg Leischer, my bandmate from Camper Van Beethoven, guesting with me. We'll record two episodes, so two conversations and a little bit of live music and maybe a free gift for participants and maybe some audience interaction, we hope.
Yeah, and I'll stand and look across from the theater's entrance to where my video store was. And just big crocodile tears running down my cheeks. I'm like, oh, it's a stationery store now. Oh, okay.
What corner was it?
Yeah, it's down the block from Dots on the same side. I have a really good one really good closing story. The hardest part of having the video store was doing the late list because you took things so personally, right? And if you saw somebody had something out for like 48 days, you'd be like, oh, come on, you know, like I'm a little store, bring it back. But across the street where the Clinton Street Theater is, there's some apartments. And one of my worst customers of bringing stuff back was somebody who lived up there. So I would call them and be like, hey, you've got this film. It's been like 32 days overdue. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'll bring it back. I said, I can see you in your window. They're like, oh, hey. And we're waving. And I'm like, do you just want to drop it out the window to me? No, no, I'll bring it. They never would. But that's kind of the magic of the neighborhood still. I think that Clinton Street neighborhood is magic.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Konser. And my guests today have been Chris Slusarenko, the host of the podcast Revolutions Per Movie, and Victor Krumenacher, the frontman for the show Coffee with Krumenacher. Chris and Victor, it's been great talking with you today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And for those listeners who might be interested in finding out more about Revolutions Per Movie and Coffee with Krumenacher, where would they look?
Coffee with Krumenacher and Revolutions Per Movie can be found at patreon.com/revolutionspermovie. Tickets for the show are available through the Clinton Street Theater at cstpdx.com. And yeah, it comes out every week. There you go. What more can I say?
Well, we hope that everybody has been enjoying our special programming for KBOO's Wake Up the Neighborhood membership drive. Before we go, I'd like to remind all of our listeners that this community radio station needs your support. To become a member of KBOO or to arrange for a donation of any size, please visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. Or if you prefer, you can mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of the show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on social media at Words and Picture.